Hello, and welcome back to the Pretty Little Podcast. We are your hosts.
My name is Phoebe.
And my name is Caroline, and today we will certainly not be yapping about anything. We won't be yapping, we won't be using the word yapper, because if you follow us on Instagram, then you're aware Phoebe actually famously hates that word now.
It's not now. I always have hated that word.
And you've just... like not said anything about it and let it get to this point.
When you started saying it, what was I gonna say? Caroline, I hate that word.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Well, guys, I basically can't even yap. I don't even have a voice.
Ugh. And whose fault is that?
Mine.
Yeah. Anyway.
I haven't been keeping it healthy, I guess.
No. And you might not like the word yap, but you do have the gift of gab, so you need to start treating it like a gift. Okay?
Right.
You need to start treating it that way. Tis the season. Appreciating the gifts that you're given.
Well,
and
Caroline,
this is one.
Why don't we get into the Angie K of it all? And the word, and the way Matt Rogers would say it. The Angie K of it all.
Well, we can, but I wanted to bring up the fact that I'm talking to Phoebe and I use the word yap in a text with Phoebe, and Phoebe says, I have a confession. I hate that word yap. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have even said it. Oh my God,
no,
I can't believe I said it out loud.
No, stop. It's because Caroline and I are very similar.
And no, we're not. How dare you? Just kidding.
I texted her, can I be honest about something? Because we were talking about how we were going to start naming our titles.
Uh-huh.
Our episodes.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And Caroline thought we could do like yapping about. And I was like, that's where I draw the line.
And Phoebe absolutely put her foot down. And what she didn't know was she also put a dagger through my heart, because in that exact moment, I went into the little bushel of Christmas presents that I've gathered for those I love. And I pull out the matching sweatshirts I got for me and Phoebe that say professional yapper on them.
Well, I'm glad to know that's what you're doing, because I sent that text that I hate that word and Caroline didn't answer for like a long time. And
I was like,
oh my God, I like really offended Caroline when I said that, I guess.
You couldn't have imagined just how much you hurt me with that. So anyway, we will be doing a photo shoot in the professional yapper sweatshirts. You can bet your bottom freaking dollar. But anyway, I wanted to say one more thing about you. Because I think this is the most on brand, and I can't even believe I'm admitting this, but I posted this gorgeous 20 photo carousel for Phoebe's birthday on the pod Instagram, if you saw it. And if you didn't wish Phoebe a happy birthday, we noticed. But anyway, I posted this. I was like, oh my God, we get the highs, we get the lows, we get all the ages, we get all these amazing moments here. What a beautiful portrait of Phoebe's 24 years on Earth. And to start off the carousel, I'm going to put this photo of Phoebe absolutely party pooped. Okay, she's absolutely party pooped in this photo. She is laying on the ground, party hat on, party blower in her mouth, asleep in a Hello Kitty sleeping bag, which I did see. And I was like, I think that's my sleeping bag. Get out. But then mom and dad text, or Phoebe texts in the family group chat, and she says, Caroline, there's much rumor and speculation that that first photo might actually be of you. Yep. And mom goes, just leave it. It's cute. I was like,
it does look like me, though.
The hair, like
the
in
hair
that
and
angle.
My nose. But I did. I adjusted,
my nose.
I adjusted my viewpoint. And
yes.
When you look at it sideways, it looks more like you.
And yes, I agree. And when I look at it through the lens of, oh, this is actually me, it looks more like me. But I was like, how?
How perfect
so
is that?
So fucking funny is it that for your birthday, I posted a photo of myself. So now for my birthday, you have to post a recent selfie
That's
of you.
That's going to be the new thing. And no one's going to know who's who.
It'll,
for our birthdays,
well,
we just post
pictures. Well, we are fraternal twins, because
oh, yeah.
It's like, how are we expected to know?
Well, exactly.
Anyway, so now...
Mom actually famously had to put Sharpie marks on our cheeks so she could tell us apart.
She had to write our names in Sharpie on our cheeks.
But in this picture, we're actually sleeping... Caroline
is sleeping on the cheek.
Caroline's sleeping on the cheek
that
has the Sharpie
market
on it.
The Sharpie market.
For sure.
Oh, I want to go to the Sharpie market. I want to go to the Sharpie market.
When are we going to Pixar?
Oh, we need to plan this. How about
you bought the tickets.
No, I didn't. Merry Christmas, I'll get them. But we need to pick a date to go. Okay, but you wanted to talk about... the Angie K of it all, and I think we should. Why don't you?
Yeah, well, Angie, you know that I have been sold on Angie as a housewife.
Uh-huh.
I'm not really on her side a lot. Okay. And I think it's because I'm predisposed to, like, I normally am going to side with Meredith.
Okay, yeah.
Even though Meredith is normally in the wrong.
Yeah.
It's just, like, I love Meredith.
Okay, yeah.
It's the same with Lisa. Uh-huh. This season's getting tricky.
It's getting very tricky for me and Lisa.
But I still love the bitch.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
And I'm getting there with Angie. It's just, like, sometimes, like, the high body count hair, that was an amazing.
Oh, an amazing moment.
Amazing moment. But I was like, okay, Angie, like, let's style it back. Because Brittany, it's giving, like, the ninth grade girls making fun of the seventh grade girls.
I have felt that way for a while. That, like, I think part of what Angie's failing to realize is that there's a difference between being accepted and loved by the show.
Yeah.
And by those that group of girls.
Yes.
And I think that Brittany realizes it. Angie does not. And Angie, it's working for her to live in that delusion where she thinks
sure.
that it's the same thing. But it is very much not. And I think that these girls are kind of laughing at her, but they also see her for what she is. And they see her for, like, she is bringing great ratings to this show. And I think, I mean, it's just a perfect storm. The only housewife I think I actually don't enjoy watching on my screen is Whitney.
And Whitney actually had a moment this week where she made me laugh.
When?
It was one of her confessionals, and it was a moment that didn't have to do with her. Also, at the end, when Lisa storms out of dinner.
Yeah.
And Mary goes, okay, well, can I get my whatever?
And Mary's like,
you see Whitney's face, and she goes,
I know, like, no, that was funny.
I was like, I like when they can, like, be self-aware yes. about what's going on. So, Angie, through an interview she did, not Lost Culch, and also now Lost Culch,
uh-huh.
I've come to the conclusion that she thinks being a housewife is the same thing as, like, being the president of St. Jude Hospital.
I think you're right. I think she thinks what she's doing is actually really valiant, and she's telling really important stories. And
it's a skill, which is true.
And it's a skill.
But the way she talks about it is like she is a neurosurgeon.
Hey, I do think it is a skill to live in and maintain such a high level of delusion so publicly, you know, and to hear people talk about it. But I mean, I'm saying it's a skill because, you know, maybe in the 1800s, no one would have seen that as a skill set. But I'll tell you, in the year 2024, that is one of the most marketable, like, lucrative skill sets you can have. Because if you can live in that delusion where you can do anything, and as long as it gets views and clicks and dollar signs, you don't care.
Right.
Like, you see that as everybody loves me. When the truth is, like, there are people who are saying to you, Angie, you're in the wrong. Like, Angie, you're this, you're that, who aren't being nice to her. She doesn't care.
Right.
And she doesn't. And that is the level of delusion needed to be successful as a public figure in 2024,
for
I
sure.
think. And that's why she sent her snowflake.
Yeah.
Like, and also because she's like, she's that girl at work that you're like, God, we all hate our fucking jobs. Can't we just admit it? And she's like, I love it here. I love my job. And that's why, you guys, that's why I'm sitting next to Andy. It's because I am loyal to the company.
The way that she was talking about sitting next to Andy and Brittany was on Watch What Happens, I guess, and said, I think it should have been an OG. And Angie goes, well, she should be happy that I paved the way.
I know. I mean, well, she says, dream big, Brittany. And I'm like, okay, well, that's like been my whole thing. And you know what, Phoebe? I want to be clear, Angie, if you're listening, this is coming from Phoebe. I am completely on board with you and your performance this season.
I am.
Okay, good.
I am. But I mean, you were on my nightmare a couple weeks ago.
You were on Phoebe's, but you weren't on mine, and you probably won't be.
But it was because of, I forget.
Was
even
it the scroll?
Why.
You really didn't like the scroll moment.
No, it wasn't the scroll because it was more recent than that. But it's not that I didn't like the scroll. I thought that was awesome. I was worried.
Yeah.
That Salt Lake was going to become a little bit gimmicky.
Well, and that's, I think, the perfect trick.
She chose the line. It's perfect.
Yeah. She does not take it too far.
Yes.
And like, she'll make a big move and then she kind of pulls back a little bit. Like, she knows when to let it kind of breathe and let somebody else, like, that's what's different about Angie.
It might have been the bat mitzvah that put her on the nightmare.
Angie does not suck all of the energy out of the room.
Which is
the way
Whitney
that, like,
does.
Lisa does. You know what I mean? So it's different. It's like Lisa is the main character. Angie's not. Angie's not the main character, but she is maybe one of the most important characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but if Lisa's in the room, Angie's never going to be the main character, actually.
How did you feel about, and this is another place where I just think Whitney, she, and it's not always that she's wrong. Like, with this, what I'm about to say, I do think she's has a point, but the way she communicates her point is always like, you don't have to therapize these women, and you don't have to, like, you
God,
don't have
I
to
know.
Tell everybody how to think and how to feel about a situation because you think you're, like,
yeah,
enlightened in a way that yeah. they're not. The stuff with Bronwyn talking about her relationship,
mm-hmm.
and when Meredith and Lisa were like, which was like, I was like, inside thought.
Yeah.
When they were like, well, what have you done to make him do XYZ? I agree to it. Like, with Whitney's confessional, I'm like, okay, you're right. Maybe they are projecting. But you don't need to then sit at lunch and be like, yeah, guys.
Yeah.
It's like, that's where she loses me.
Yeah.
And when she says healing.
Yeah, I think that Whitney is such a good example of somebody who, like, never did therapy, was not really, like, interested in developing any kind of self-awareness or, like, emotional intelligence in that way. And when she started doing it, she's like, oh, I'm better than all of you. Which
right.
I think a lot of people can relate to. And, like, I mean, there are certainly times when I'm like, oh, it's hard to talk to someone who's not in therapy about certain things. Because
yeah.
it's just like, we're just not in the same place mentally. So, like, I wouldn't have been able to, like, think about this before I was doing all, you know, it takes steps, it's building blocks. That's what Whitney's not getting. Like, these girls aren't on a healing journey, Whitney. So you don't need to talk to them like this. It's going to fall on deaf ears. They have to, like, build the blocks just like you did and get there on their own.
Yeah.
And if you want them to be turned on to that and go into their own healing journey, then you need to stop being so annoying about yours. Like, you need to stop shoving it down everybody's throat. You need to stop.
And,
like,
she comes at it and she
holier than thou, like
that. And she doesn't want it to seem this way. Like, I don't think. Well, I think she is judgmental, but I think she thinks she's handling it in a way where it doesn't seem like she is.
Yeah.
But she absolutely is judgmental.
Oh, she's like, I'm trying to help you.
And it's
let
like,
me help you. And it's like, they're not ready for that help yet. So you just can't. Like, just stop. And also, we don't want to watch it. It's not
and
interesting.
And I also just, like, you act like you're so enlightened, and then we watch you on the after show every week,
yeah.
like, foaming at the mouth.
I know.
For negative stuff about the people you don't like.
Yes.
With Bronwyn. The
right.
way that she looks at Bronwyn when Bronwyn talks about the changes in her and Lisa's friendship.
Yeah.
I'm like, Whitney. It's an ugly look.
I know. I think so, too. And I think I don't want to misspeak here. I want to be clear that I'm not saying her journey isn't interesting, her
yeah,
healing
yeah, yeah,
journey.
Yeah, yeah.
I just mean in this season, we're not really seeing it.
No.
You know, so it's not even like I know she's just talking about, like, being in therapy and going on
and
this journey. But
like,
we're not seeing the journey. The journey I would be interested to see for sure. But this, I'm preaching about the work I'm doing that none of you are seeing and that none of you are doing. And so I'm better than you.
Exactly.
It's not
that's
coming
the
off
issue.
The way you think it's coming off.
And it's exactly. It's not a matter of us not valuing what Whitney has been through and how she's
yeah.
addressing it. I think that's awesome. But the way that she uses that to navigate situations
mm-hmm.
and to present herself in situations, that's where the problem
yes.
comes.
Well, I do want to say about Salt Lake, you know, when Angie went on Las Culturistas, and if you haven't listened, you've got to. No one has ever been more excited to be on any podcast ever than she is to be, which I think is so cute.
Yeah.
Like, I love that she was so excited to do. I mean, it is really endearing to see a housewife who's excited to be a housewife.
Yes, that's
who's not
true.
Like, oh, this job and these women,
but
I hate
you
them.
Love it.
Like, it's like you are in a very privileged position. It's kind of nice to see her acknowledging that, like, this is something she wanted, and also maybe it's okay to want superficial things like that.
Right.
You know, like
exactly.
she wants to be Center Snowflake, and that seems stupid to a lot of people, and maybe it is. But I think it's nice that she just wants it and she's just open about that. That's what's so endearing about her. But her going on Las Culch, she's so excited. She's so generous with her time. She talks so much. It is awesome. And then at the very end, or whatever, no, not at the very end. I posted that she went on and she responds to our story And she says, oh my God, thank you so much. I literally, you have no idea. I love them. I actually worship them. I could not believe I got to go on their pod. What a gift. She sends like this long message.
I think what's also nice about Salt Lake is that, because we've got like Lisa will respond.
Yes.
Like, they.
Meredith, every single one of we've ever tagged has responded.
They like.
Which is kind of funny.
It's awesome. They like. I mean, certain people in Beverly Hills have been on for so long that it's so different. But I just think that, like, Roni's a good example of they assumed the housewife position.
Yeah.
And there's a level of, like...
Well, we're housewives.
Exactly. Like, whereas Salt Lake, it's like, I know they're the most... They were designed in a lab for this show. But for some reason, they are the most relatable. And I think that's part of it.
Because they're, like, in the middle of nowhere, low-key. Like, not really the middle of nowhere, I know. But they're not New York. They're not one of, like, the big...
And I feel like with like Miami, like these other newer franchises, they have the energy of like, well, I don't need to respond.
Yeah.
Or I don't need to do X, Y, Z. And it's like.
Well, what's also interesting is that the Salt Lake girls are putting Salt Lake on the map.
Yeah.
And they're acknowledging that.
Interesting to hear Angie mentions talk about it.
Yeah. She's like, I love it here. Like, it's so great. And like, people are figuring that out and stop moving here. Yeah. Like, whatever. But
she goes, you guys can. You guys can.
Yeah. Oh my God, when she was like, and Bowen will go on a ski trip. I was like, okay, and Matt?
And Matt. I'm Matt's mom. I'm fully Matt's mom.
I know. I'm like, and what about, hey, Matt, stick up for yourself. So you'll be there too. Come on. Anyway, I just thought it was so funny that she responded. And I was like, you know, she spent hours responding to like everyone. But anyway, I messaged back and I was like, Angie, we love you so much. Meanwhile, Phoebe's like, oh my God, she was just on my nightmare.
No, that's not how I said it. I was like, of course.
Yeah. How embarrassing for you.
If she were to go listen to like, our most recent few episodes, she would know pretty quickly that I had some qualms with her.
Yeah, but honestly, I'm like, I feel like Angie would be like, okay.
She'd be like, okay, I'll come on and let's talk about it.
Yeah, literally.
I want to know your perspective.
Let's talk about it. Okay, I can see how you would think
that,
Phoebe.
Because here's the thing, if Meredith and her are never going to have that conversation and I'm not here to stick up for Meredith all the time. I'm just saying, like, there are certain perspectives where I'm like, I can see Meredith's side of things.
So funny.
She is so, oh my God. And also,
no idea she's funny.
No, that's what's, oh my God. And her kids, when she's talking about how Angie made fun of her impairment.
Yeah.
And Brooks goes, it's not your disability. It's your superpower. And the other one goes, it's an enhancement. That's so fucking funny.
They all talk exactly the same. Like they're on muscle relaxers.
Seth is like,
Seth's the only one who likes uppers, and it's obvious.
It's because he goes to Canton, Ohio.
Oh my God. Seth is, I can't even actually talk about Seth.
But
I hate Seth, famously.
Me?
Yeah.
Do I?
I feel like you've talked a lot of shit on Seth Marks.
I think I've talked a lot of shit about a lot of people on this podcast that I probably actually don't mind. But I was watching a TikTok the other day of this guy. Guys, I'm so sorry about my voice. This is terrible.
Thank you for finally apologizing.
I led the episode with an apology.
So I'm getting maybe just set a timer for like every 10 minutes to say sorry, just in case someone didn't hear it the first time.
Right, right. I watched a TikTok. It was this guy who was, he was like the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City opening gifts.
Uh-huh.
And before he said a word, just by his posture,
you knew who it was.
I knew it was Meredith because he was like,
and she's just,
she's legendary.
Yeah, she's legendary.
Like they all are. It's the best. And after watching Beverly Hills, which is actually, I think the season's been pretty good.
Yes, I'm loving it.
But like,
it's not nearly as good though.
Salt Lake is truly a gift. Another TikTok I saw was this girl going, guys. Every Wednesday, I want to watch Salt Lake City in an IMAX theater.
No, actually.
I want Lisa Barlow to be 30 feet tall in front of me.
Because it is so good. And like, I'm watching Beverly Hills. I'm enjoying it. But to say that these are jam-packed episodes, I mean, there's a lot of filler. And these girls have some real serious shit they're going through.
Also, but what I will say, I don't think we've ever said this. Dorit might be one of the most gorgeous people.
Beautiful people on planet Earth.
In America.
And I don't give a fuck if it's fake. I don't care. Hey, by the way, guys, can we stop? Everyone's like, oh, well, it's fake for when people are pretty. It's like, well, they're still pretty.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if it's fake. They still look like that.
There's a lot of people who get the fake stuff and don't look pretty.
And it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care how you got it. I don't care if you paid for it. You are really pretty now. I just don't care.
Actually, who's your doctor?
Yeah, I literally don't care. In fact, I want to know more. But anyway, I think Dorit is so, so, so pretty. And I love her outfits. And I just really like Dorit.
I do too. And I felt that way since she was first on the show. I mean, I always hated PK.
Yeah.
I think Dorit is so funny with her little fucking accent.
Oh my God. Yeah, her little weird, and the way she talks. I mean, it's so funny. It is. I love seeing Dorit just not give a fuck in this season. She's like, okay, you know what? PK and I are separated. Kyle's being a fucking bitch.
Which
like,
is, everyone let's just talk sucks. About Kyle.
Kyle, I'm not on your side. Kyle Richards saying that one of the biggest things that Dorit did that made her upset was when they were at BravoCon. Someone asked Dorit who her favorite Hilton was, and or who her favorite Richards sister was, and Kyle is right sitting next to her and like says something shitty or whatever. And then, but it's like a joke. They're sitting next to each other, and Dorit's like, "Oh well, it's obviously not Kyle." And Kyle's like, "I can't believe you
it's
would do that to me."
Like when someone.
You know you have no legs to stand on, so you like take something and
that,
make it.
And it's also like there is a deeper rooted issue that she doesn't want to talk about, so she's picking this thing.
Yeah, I just think that the Dorit is hilarious. I thought it was so funny to bring Camille Grammer into the scene. And when she's like, well, I just want to say that, you know, when I was going through my hard time, like Dorit, I seem to remember you not giving me much grace. And Dorit says, you were a total to me, Camille. And I loved it. But Kyle had a very big problem with Dorit using the C word, which Phoebe's going to bleep out. But that is the word that I just used and that Dorit used. And Kyle had a really big issue with it. And I was like, Kyle, give me a break. Like, you've never heard the C word before, please. And I love Garcelle and Sutton's friendship. They're so funny together. But Garcelle, I was like, just when she made the big deal about Dorit sharing Teddy's dad's story.
Yeah.
It was like, Garcelle, stay out of this.
I think it was Lost Cult who was talking about that. Maybe they were like, it's so clear that these women don't understand social media. Or no. I think it was a confessional. I think Dorit was the one talking about it. She was like, these women don't understand.
Well, it's like, she wasn't sharing it. And they're like, oh, I just don't think that like John Mellencamp needs Dorit to like, promote him. And it's like, that's not what Dorit was even saying. She was just being nice because she was tagged in it and she shared it.
Exactly.
And it doesn't fucking mean anything. Like,
yes.
And for Garcelle to come out of the woodwork, like crawling out because she wanted to say something about it, it's like, okay, you will have plenty of dramatic moments. You don't need this one too. I thought it was interesting that Kathy didn't stand up for Kyle one time during that dinner.
Yeah.
Sutton,
I do love. Sutton could be on Salt Lake.
You know, I say it all the time. I'm like, you know, I saw Sutton. Then you'd never remember, but I saw her in the airport. Now you care because you're watching Beverly Hills.
Yes, that's probably why.
It was in the Nashville airport.
She, her little tiny fucking legs.
I was in Draper James in the Nashville
airport,
right? And she was in there and I hear her, she's talking to someone and I like that accent, I would know it anywhere. And she's talking and it's like this young girl who went up to her and was like, I'd love to like send you my information. And Sutton's like, well, of course, go for it. And like they were like connecting and she was like, I want to like work for you. And like, I'm sure it was just blowing smoke. But
oh my gosh.
Sutton was very nice to this girl. And I didn't say anything.
I really like Sutton. I've always thought she's just like so
kooky.
She's
so fucking funny.
And that's what I saw this video of her meeting Rebecca Black. I think I sent it to you.
Oh,
and they're like doing all those little interviews that all the housewives have been doing recently in that like whatever room.
Uh-huh.
Rebecca Black comes in. She's so excited to meet Sutton. And Sutton.
No idea.
Standing there. And she's holding her phone. Playing Friday.
No way.
And she goes, every Friday picking up my kids from school. When they were growing up, this is our song. And then she's like, oh, and this part. And she's like,
my God.
And Rebecca Black is like beside herself.
Wait, that's so funny. You know who Sutton Loki is going to grow up to be? Let's say it on count of three. One, two, three. KK. Ah! Okay. I mean, is she
Which,
not?
Did you watch? I don't know if you watched. I just emailed the video that I made for G-Daddy's birthday.
Oh, it was so cute.
The
KK at the end. Happy birthday, David, my husband. We just watched. watched a 10-minute video of people saying happy birthday. Funny. We know exactly who you're saying happy birthday.
Happy birthday to David.
My husband.
And she's in her Defying Gravity sweatshirt, which I love that she wears the kids Defying Gravity sweatshirt. And but Lydie did say that the video cut off because she signed off with her full name.
Phoebe, is there anything worse than the week before your period? The sleeplessness, breakouts, the cravings, and the blah, blah, blah. PMS is the worst. Luckily, now it's easier to manage with Estro Control.
Estro Control is a formula developed by Happy Mammoth. And the way it eases PMS is pretty interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, which is where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. When that estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, women may start having PMS, blemishes, cravings, you know the drill.
Estro Control was created to help women feel like themselves all throughout the month. PMS isn't robbing me of a week of my life every month anymore. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PRETTYLITTLEPODCAST at checkout.
Again, that's happymammoth.com and use the code PRETTYLITTLEPODCAST for 15% off today.
Okay, gosh, have we bided enough time now that I can talk about Justin Baldoni because I have a whole Google Doc here.
Caroline just exhausted all of her hyperfixation time on Luigi Mangione, and now she has a new hyperfixation and special interest.
Well, because this
wait, let's just talk about Luigi for a second.
Okay.
The haircut.
Well, you know what video I saw?
I know exactly what you're going to say. They said that means he's buddies.
Protected. Yeah. They said don't fuck with him. And I'm like, oh my God, duh. That makes so much sense now, but kind of like crazy to think. So this girl put out a video. I guess both of her parents have been incarcerated. And she was like, it is a sign to the prison guards, to everybody that he's being taken care of, that he is not alone in here, that he has friends. Like he has a fresh fade and they threaded his eyebrows. He is, don't fuck with him, is what that message is sending, which I think is so fascinating.
And I'm also like, okay, we're not going to get into the weeds with this, but I do just think if we didn't want people to be, you know, into this and into him.
The perp walk.
Why did we do a perp walk?
the Twitter, the social media intern for the NYPD is like, work, diva.
Why did we take the coolest pictures that have ever been taken of a criminal of him if we don't want to?
If you're going to charge him with terrorism, why is this the move?
And like Eric Adams, did you have to be there?
It is really interesting. They're like, maybe if we're in a photograph with him.
I'm sorry, he killed, and it's terrible, it's sad. He killed one person. He made sure that nobody else was going to be hurt. He isn't really, a major threat to people outside. And you're doing this? This feels like a lot.
It feels like you know like how New
York, people immediately after the thing happened, everybody on the news was like, and it's not, nobody in New York needs to be worried. Like, he's at large.
I mean, there's a video of him shooting the guy. And then there's a woman who completely makes eye contact with him and gets out unscathed. Like he had a target, which is terrible. And like, it really is horrible. And it's really fascinating and frightening to see like their response. Like it's really going to be interesting.
And we're already seeing some copycats.
Yeah. We
don't condone. Don't do that.
It's deeply troubling.
Me to the world. Don't do that.
Don't do that, you guys. Come on. Don't do that. Okay? For real. But yeah, so I did kind of exercise like I ran my brain out on that. And now I'm just like, okay, moving on to the next thing.
And thank God.
A little bit.
Yesterday we woke up to.
God, what a gift. Guys, has it not.
Did I break the news to you?
Did you break the news to me?
Yeah, I sent you that.
I don't know or if I had seen it already. Can't remember now.
I think I was up earlier than you.
Maybe.
And I was like, oh my God. I went straight to the Pop-ologist's story and they hadn't posted about it yet.
I know.
Because I was like, surely they've like done a deep dive within 10 minutes of the article being uploaded.
Guys, okay. Let's just get into this. So, first of all, Phoebe and I love when we are vindicated like this. And it's not even that we're vindicated. It's just that, guys, Phoebe and I can speak for myself, not you, but I feel the exact same way I felt when we first learned about all this, which is that, just to reiterate some of our thoughts on it, whatever Blake has done, if she's a diva, if she's had a few bitchy moments, if she's difficult to work with, whatever that may be. We were like, what is happening? Because it really seemed like everyone in the world was digging through the internet to find every shred of bad publicity Blake Lively had ever had.
And we didn't do that to Justin Baldoni.
And it didn't happen with Justin Baldoni. And we were like, oh my God, look how quickly. I mean, and it really worked. We saw a very similar treatment with Blake Lively that we saw with Amber Heard, which makes perfect sense when we find out what really was happening behind the scenes. And it's also really interesting with Amber Heard. Like, it's crazy. So that's how I felt at the time. And I was like, I'm sorry, where there is smoke, there's fire, for both parties, most likely. But the reality is, and what Phoebe and I said, even in our top 10 pop culture moments episode, we were saying, he's the director. He also is like the co-owner of the production company. And he's also playing the lead actor, and he's also executive producing.
Right.
He had such a monopoly of power on that set. And so imagine you're Blake Lively and you're in a scene with someone who's abusing you, and there's no intimacy coordinator on set.
Which is
there
wild.
Are no protections in place. There's no HR.
That's where I'm a little bit like, it just is so strange to me that he wouldn't have one, because that is his whole vibe is like, he would be into that.
And that's where it's like, there's a really fascinating part of the legal complaint at the very end of it, the end of the 80 pages, that just has quotes from his TED talk, which was about how at the other side of Me Too, there needs to be men saying, I'm sorry. And his whole TED talk is about how he's going to stop trying to be man enough. And I'll read some of the quotes, because it really is just like, that's not the same person. And what I hope comes from this is a little bit more discretion from the public when it comes to media. And like, and a little bit of cynicism as well, because what happened is we get all these Twitter threads and Reddit threads and TikToks and all these things, and people just believe every single thing because they're so eager to tear down a woman. And I feel like that's what we have said from the get-go. Is it just
cynicism
like
going in one direction? I think that I do take issue with some of the cynicism that you do see out of that, of like, people are so cynical when it comes to women, of like, they are just wait, or just generally people that are well-liked in the public. Mm-hmm. There's a big portion of the internet that is always ready to like find the opportunity to tear them down. And that's what we saw happen. And it's not that, I think this is another thing. It doesn't mean that Blake's a perfect person.
No, absolutely not.
But I think that we should, as a collective, we need to take a look in the mirror and say, why was it so easy for all of us to immediately think she was in the wrong? But as soon as a man does a TED talk where he talks about there needs to be men saying I'm sorry, we think that and it's like, okay, it's cyclical.
It just shows like our predisposition to believe men over women, and like, it is really a bummer. And I was talking to some of my friends who were like, wow, I was feeling like excited to see Blake Lively go down. And they're like, but do I just feel like that because of this? And it's like, I think so. And so here are the few things I want to say before, but I'm going to go into a little bit of a deep dive. But like,
that'd be awesome.
I think what we need to decide is, does the punishment fit the crime? Does Blake's cancellation fit her in an interview from 10 years ago saying, look at your little bum?
Or the fact that we know that some of the people on Gossip Girl didn't like her,
like that they didn't get along. Guess what? They're actors. Of course they didn't get along.
It's like, you don't love everybody you work with.
They worked together for like 15 years. Like, yeah, you're not going to get along with everybody. So I'm going to start off with this. So, okay, it ends with us. A lot of this is happening this year. Right out of the gates, no one on that cast is following Justin on Instagram, although he's following all of them. No one will pose with Justin in photos. No one watches the movie with Justin. It immediately becomes a Blake problem. And one thing I think it's interesting,
which is crazy.
It's crazy. And I think it's really, really interesting that Blake is not the only person who has complaints in this suit. I'm going to mention other people, not their names, but they're mentioned in here. Other people had things to say about Justin. Other people on set were victim to the different things that he was doing in the unsafe environment he created on that set by not doing his due diligence as an employer, which we will get to. She had the most power. So she was the only one who could do this. And that's what I think is like, we also need to see here. And I think it's something that Taylor Swift does as well. They put themselves on the line in hopes that it does help other people and makes conditions safer for other people.
And it sucks for them because oftentimes, this happens with Taylor all the time, is when they do it, people are like,
you're a bully.
Why you don't need it. Or like, I saw Bethany Frankel's video about this and she was like, why?
What are you going to get from him?
And like, it's like, I don't think it's about that. It's really, like
the $1 lawsuit, it's symbolic.
It's like what Taylor did for sure. And this is not as dark, but it's like what Nicole Kidman says. We've been talking about how she uses her power as leverage to uplift people who were also in a situation where she was a starving actor, you know, like she's able to do that for them now.
Right.
It's very
similar. And you should do that. Yes. Like it is kind of your responsibility to send the elevator back down and help, you know, the women who are coming after you, just like the women before you helped you. And if they didn't help you, then that's even more of a reason to be the change. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think I don't even like love Blake Lively. Like I don't even really have, I kind of just don't care about either of these people.
So you're more objective.
I am honestly coming at this from a pretty objective standpoint. I don't like, I love Gossip Girl, but not because of Blake.
Right. You're a Leighton girl.
I'm a Leighton girl. Like I'm not a huge Blake Lively stan. So I'm not coming at, I just want you all to know, I'm not saying like, I have posters of her in my fucking bedroom and I'm saying all this. Okay. August 6th, 2024, Jenny Slate's Deadline interview, and she's asked what it's like working with Justin. If you will remember, her response was, I mean, what an intense job to have to do so many things. I just found myself being like, wow, I really just want to have one job at once. And in fact, I've often felt that way. I really like writing and I like it so much. It's special to be able to be a writer. But like, yeah, I was looking around. And I was like, I'm good with just acting. I love it. I just want to do it. So answer the question, Jenny. She didn't. I think that's important to note as well. No one's like clinging to these kind of things, whatever. Same day, August 6th, Justin is asked if he would return to direct and star in the movie sequel. And he says, you're going to have to ask me in a little while. We're going to take a vacation after this. I think there are better people for that one. I think Blake Lively is ready to direct. That's what I think. Now, in the legal complaint, it is mentioned in, or I'm sorry, not in the legal complaint, in the strategy outline from the PR team that he hired, one of their strategies was to make it look like Blake. I have it here. Quote, there is a clear likely motive due to the film's value and fan base in which Blake Lively is attempting to bully her way into buying the rights for It Starts With Us. This was a key messaging point on redirection, what they wanted to do. Him saying that and that answer was him already acting on that, planting the seeds that, huh, I think she's ready. She's going to want to take it.
And it did work.
And it worked.
People were like, oh, she's on that set. And she was, she was, you know, trying to take the reins from him.
I mean, literally. So August 8th, 2024.
It's crazy to see now, like having this laid out and to see how it worked. Cause I mean,
it's fascinating.
It makes you think about like,
how many other people has this happened to?
And just in not like malicious ways, what ways are PR firms manipulating
I'm saying like, we don't realize the amount of infiltration these PR teams have in our lives and on our feeds. Like we have no idea. And the other thing is, I just think, again, I don't really care about either of these people. This could have happened to anybody. But this is something we have talked about. Do these PR smear campaigns really happen? Would people really do this? We have talked about this for so long. And it happens a lot more in the music industry.
We talk about when people talk about the PR behind Travis and Taylor, like when that happens, we're like,
but
well,
they
no
don't
way.
Really do that. People don't.
But
yes,
like there is,
they do.
Even though I believe that they're together and they're in love and it's awesome, it doesn't mean that
there's
tree paint isn't behind there being like, well, how can we?
Right.
And it doesn't, with that example, I don't think that's a bad thing. Like,
no.
It works for both of them. It's the business.
Like, whatever avenue you're trying to take, this is happening. So it doesn't matter if it's a relationship or if it's like a good thing or a bad thing or whatever. This is happening. And now we officially know. And like Blake had said, her purpose with this was to pull the curtain back and hopefully help people. And like,
it is exactly
what it did. It is fascinating to me, someone who loves pop culture and celebrity. I'm like, this is all I wanted to see. An 80-page, I read it within minutes. I loved it. Okay. So August 8th, we learn about the two different cuts. And Blake's cut was chosen, which was a stain for her at the time. People were like, of course, of course. But my theory is that this was related to these gratuitous scenes he decided to add. So I'm going to read some quotes
from
the...
Which is so gross when you take in the porn addiction.
Yes. I'm going to read some quotes from the legal complaint. So, quote here. After Miss Lively signed onto the movie based on a draft of the script, Mr. Baldoni, without Miss Lively's knowledge or consent, personally added graphic content, including a scene in which Miss Lively was to orgasm on camera. When Miss Lively objected, Baldoni insisted he had added them because he was making the film, quote, through the female gaze.
Okay, again, Olivia Wilde.
Literally.
Oh my God, now we need an 80-page document about that.
I know. He agreed to remove the scenes, but made a last-ditch attempt to keep one in which the couple orgasmed together on their wedding night because he said it was important to him because he and his partner climax simultaneously during intercourse. Dude, know that you fucking know. Mr. Baldoni then intrusively asked Miss Lively whether she and her husband climax simultaneously during intercourse. On the day of shooting the scene where Lively gives birth, Baldoni and Heath, who is his business partner, suddenly pressured Lively to simulate full nudity, despite no mention of nudity for this scene in the script, her contract, or previous creative discussions. Mr. Baldoni insisted to Miss Lively that women give birth naked, and that his wife had ripped her clothes off during labor. He claimed it was not normal for women to birth in their hospital gowns. Miss Lively disagreed, but felt forced into a compromise.
As if Blake Lively doesn't have like three kids.
As if she hasn't given birth.
She just gave birth before this, by the way.
Yes. She felt forced into a compromise that she would be naked from below the chest down. Shoot day lacked industry procedure for nude scenes. There was no intimacy coordinator to choreograph it, no signed nudity rider. Monitors in the place were not turned off, so it was broadcasted to the entire set. It was not a closed set, so non-essential staff could pass through while her legs were spread in stirrups. She's naked from the chest down, and she has a small piece of fabric taped over her vagina. And Mr. Baldoni also invited his friend to play the OBGYN for that scene. And she didn't know. So, I'm sorry. Some of those scenes, maybe that's why we got her cut. You know what I mean? Because that wasn't the female gaze, dude. And if you want it to be through the female gaze, why the fuck are you the one directing it?
I'm not a Colleen Hoover. Like, I don't read her books. I think she's problematic. But I also think it's important to note that she's the one who picked Blake's cut.
Yes.
Like, she... And she wrote the book. So, it's like...
And Sony, the distributor, like...
It doesn't make
like Blake just
Blake
like
this villain.
I know. I think, well, and wait till we hear later some other things that I think she did specifically to protect other women on set.
And I mean, this is where I know you already basically said this, but like when all the pictures were being taken, I don't understand how we saw them all taking pictures of Blake and people thought that
she's the
issue.
Bad guy.
Because she's so powerful. It's like,
because
okay.
They were excited to hate her. It was an opportunity they had been waiting for. So I think also like, so we hear that. And Blake is the one with the most power. So she is the one who can actually speak up. But to say that she is the only one who felt unsafe is absolutely untrue. So this is number 38 in the legal complaint. Mr. Baldoni added a detailed scene to the film in which the underage version of Miss Lively's character, Lily, loses her virginity. In both the book and the script for the film, there was no sex scene. Instead, the details about this moment were left to the audience's imagination. But Mr. Baldoni added in considerable details, including both dialogue between young Lily and her boyfriend about the loss of her virginity, as well as a simulated sex scene in which Mr. Baldoni filmed and included in his initial cut of the film, a close-up of young Lily's face accompanied by an audible gasp at the moment of penetration. Miss Lively was informed that when this scene was shot, after Baldoni called cut, he walked over to the actors and said, "I know I'm not supposed to say this, but that was hot. Did you two practice this before?" I'm sorry, it sounds to me like Blake is protecting the young fucking actors. Like, she was informed of this somehow, and it's included in her legal complaint. Again, how is this Blake just being difficult for her own sake? Like, that's her protecting someone else who doesn't have the same agency or equity that Blake Lively has. And Blake knows that. You know, it's a good thing.
I did not know about that.
Isn't that insane?
My jaw dropped.
Isn't that insane? Yeah, okay.
That's crazy.
So yeah, okay. So then we have August 13th, 2024. The news breaks that Justin hires a crisis publicist. At this point, we're like, what crisis are you in?
And weren't they connected to the Johnny Depp?
So Melissa Nathan worked on Depp versus Heard, and it's Jennifer Abel who run the agency group, which specializes in communications, crisis, reputation management, personal publicity, and digital team services across the entertainment industry. I know. And Blake's lawsuit reveals they were actually hired the first week of August. So we found out about it the second week, but they were hired the first week, which is when Justin was saying, oh, Blake wants to direct. No one's be like, all these things were already happening.
Oh my God.
And I believe a lot of this started because Baldoni noticed that Ryan Reynolds blocked him on Instagram. He was afraid that if Blake did that too, it would start things. So he wanted to proactively have a plan for that.
And it's like, we also, for some reason, we weaponized the fact that she wanted Ryan to be a part of it. And it's like, okay, now it makes perfect sense she wanted her husband there.
I know. I thought the same thing. I'm like, they're like, it's weird he rewrote the scene. I'm like, not if the scene is one that she felt unsafe in, and the director and the lead actor and the producer are the person who she has to go talk to about it. Yes. And there's no HR team either. Like, okay, so August 15th, Sony praises Blake. They're the distributor for the movie. The CEO says, Blake, Colleen, and so many women put so much effort into this remarkable movie, working selflessly from the start to ensure that such an important subject matter was handled with care. Audiences love the movie. Blake's passion and commitment to advancing the conversation around domestic violence is commendable. We love working with Blake, and we want to do 12 more movies with her. I never heard this quote. Did you?
No.
Never. August 15th. Never heard it. And it's like, it's because it was fucking buried.
This lawsuit, she's suing Justin, Wayfarer, his company, and the PR firm.
I need to look at actually exactly who's listed. We can look at that in a second. But at first I was like, why is she suing him and not the production company? Well, it's his production company.
Right.
So.
Because I saw all those comments. I was like, I'm pretty sure she is.
It's him. So August 20th, Brandon Sklenar, I don't know how you say his last name, but it's Atlas, posts on Instagram defending Blake. And he also doesn't follow Justin.
Famously almost played by Matt Rogers. And would we even be in this mess if Matt Rogers had played Atlas?
I'm sorry, if Matt Rogers was playing Atlas, do you know how quickly he would have said, and you do not talk to Blake Lively like that. I mean, he would have handled Justin Baldoni, I'll tell you that. So
imagine him playing that character.
Imagine him bleach hair playing that character. Oh, I love it. His high body got hair. I love it. Okay. So he posts, and I'll just read a little bit of what he posted.
Because I didn't know he posted.
Oh, he posted in defense of Blake, in defense of everything that was happening online to her.
Wow.
On August 20th. And it's also important, like, he doesn't follow Justin.
That's the thing. And also, when I was looking through all the pictures, it's when I made the collage from, like, press, it really is, like, it's, and like the way that she and Jenny like interact,
I
like
know.
It's clear that they,
it's
and,
also,
and I obviously we don't know these people, but I think Jenny Slate seems like she's a good judge of character.
Yes, I do too.
And I think that she wouldn't be acting buddy-buddy with Blake.
I don't think so. And I would love to hear her thoughts on this.
And I frankly don't feel like she falls. People are acting like she's some like little known actress who needs to fall at the knees to for Blake and Ryan. It's like, I don't think she's really all that worried. She dated Chris Evans. Like she's in the crew.
Yes.
So it's like, I don't think she's going to like just butter up Blake on the carpet for that. Like that never stuck for me.
I agree. I
don't know what he's in. So maybe, but
And another thing though with Jenny Slate is like, she's the funny girl. I feel like it, honestly, I'm sure they had a lot of conversations where Blake said, number one, I'm not going to pressure you to say anything. Like,
right.
I will do this. And I'm like, you know, Taylor Swift and Blake are behind the scenes. Like, I can't, just to be a fly on the wall.
I need to be in the group message.
So here's some of what he wrote. Colleen and the women of this cast stand for hope, perseverance, and for women choosing a better life for themselves. Vilifying the women who put so much of their heart and soul into making this film because they believe so strongly in its message seems counterproductive and detracts from what this film is about. It is, in fact, the opposite of the point. What may or may not have happened behind the scenes does not, and hopefully should not, detract from what our intentions were in making this film. It's been disheartening to see the amount of negativity being projected online. That's one paragraph. It's like a three-paragraph statement.
It's such an interesting, and I think we started touching on this, but the way that, and I don't mean, there's definitely a psychology behind it, but so there's this, the movie is about domestic violence. So the audience is very much passionate about that cause. Mm-hmm. And then we get this man directing it who is like supposed to be like the new face of the new kind of masculinity and all this stuff. And it's just interesting that there was not that recognition that people had of what was happening.
Yes.
Of like, why we're having these conversations about women being treated poorly by men and domestic violence, all this stuff, and we're finding every reason to be like, well, Blake's not even posting about
domestic hotlines
and all this stuff. And it's like, it's just, I really would love to have a conversation with someone who like studies stuff like that, because we don't talk about it a lot because we are so focused on the like misogyny on the other end of the spectrum. That's like, we hate women and it's obvious. Right.
And so there was like a lot, obviously, that happened. The writer's strike happens, and, or maybe it wasn't the writer's strike, but the filming strike happens. They had to stop filming. They come back and Blake's like, the only way I'm coming back is if we have this rider.
Okay, yes.
And they all have a meeting.
Because that was a question I saw being asked online a lot of like, why did she, if she was doing the movie before, and then this came, they were a little bit confused.
Well, there
by
was
that.
No HR department is the other thing. It's and crazy. He says, they say in
this. I
also
hate the way people are framing it. The list of Blake's demands.
Yeah, demands, which are extremely reasonable. And we'll read some in a little bit.
And it's hard because we don't, I think, like, because we aren't in the industry of like seeing what those contracts typically look like, especially on a movie where there's sex scenes.
Right.
It's like, we don't, some of the stuff might seem egregious.
Yes.
But I don't really think any of it is.
But, and let's be real, like, Blake Lively has worked on many a set.
Exactly.
And she's,
she knows what's reasonable.
Think about the things she was filmed doing in Gossip Girl. Okay. She knows a lot about nudity riders. She knows a lot about like HR departments on set.
And she was in scenes like that scene with Chuck, like in the first episode.
Intimacy court. Yes. She's been in many of these. So, you know, they all meet and they're like, okay, yeah, we'll agree to your demands. But let me get into a little bit of the marketing plan. I think this is really, really interesting. So you're mentioning, you know, he's the only one talking about all this stuff, whatever. All right. Production concludes. This is section D of the legal complaint. And Miss Lively and other cast and crew promoted the movie according to the marketing plan. All right. So we have a marketing plan here. It's Exhibit C.
Crazy.
But what it says is the marketing plan and related talking points expressly required Miss Lively, as well as all other cast and crew, to focus more on her character's strength and resilience, as opposed to describing the film as a story about domestic violence. Quote, avoid talking about this film in any way that makes it feel sad or heavy. It's a story of hope.
Oh my God.
As detailed above,
it
gets worse. As detailed above, Miss Lively and fellow cast members promoted the film in accordance, talking about it on appearances on red carpets, interviews, press junkets, fan events, blah, blah, blah. Mr. Baldoni publicly embraced the marketing plan. In early May, he appeared at a floral-themed trailer launch event.
Floral.
Yes.
Because we have that was so damning for Blake when she said, bring your friends.
He was
your
personally
florals.
Making flower bouquets for influencers, a photo opportunity, and film branded latte art. On July 25th, Mr. Baldoni appeared at a pop-up of her flower shop in Century City, California, where he held a long stem rose microphone and playfully gave tours of the shop to influencers. And in a TikTok interview posted that day, he excitedly walks through the pop-up and states that he will be giving tours all day, every day until August 9th. Okay. So then, in advance of the release of the film, all these cast members are showing up separately, and he starts to get a little bit nervous about it, concerned that the public would discover that, quote, something is much bigger under the surface. So at that point, Mr. Baldoni pivots away from the film's marketing plan to explain his absence from the rest of the cast. He shifted his focus away from a message of female triumph to instead capitalize on female trauma. After the film's premiere, Mr. Baldoni changed his Instagram profile to include that link, canceled lighthearted social media posts, and instructed his team to look for survivors' reactions and support, all in an effort to quickly shift his own public narrative to focus solely on survivors and domestic violence organizations. Miss Abel, part of the PR firm, cautions him that the shift might be too drastic too soon. So here are some texts from Justin Baldoni. Hey, just landed. What is the TikTok strategy? I'd like you guys to start posting me only talking about domestic violence and clips and why this movie is so important. So they do that. And then, yeah, by repositioning his marketing of the film, Mr. Baldoni hoped to create the false impression that he had chosen not to appear because they wouldn't talk about this. He wrote,
right, and didn't he say that thing that was like, this is different, but later on, he said that thing about not wanting to be pictured with them because he didn't want to like be the abuser in the pictures.
Totally right? Not true. Yeah, I don't remember that, but probably. He writes to Jennifer Abel, I need you guys to really be on all the stories I'm tagged in. I think you should let all people DM me so you can see people's reactions to the film and I can be reposting everything. These next 36 hours are crucial and we need to be on it. Looking at everything, finding the most emotional and touching content from survivors supporting this film and reposting. Need you to be finding survivors sharing their stories and amplifying them on my page and TikTok. He then said, he went so far as to proposing to share a video of a woman's birth moment, but his team talked him out of it, warning him that it might be perceived as weird and was too intimate.
Yeah.
Mr. Baldoni's team talked him out of a lot of his ideas, writing they don't recommend using private DMs as content because he wanted to post these survivors' stories that DM'd him to his story.
Crazy. Yes.
So that is in the marketing plan what they were supposed to be doing, and he deviated from it. And it was in a contract. Like, I'm sorry for... I just think it made her look bad. Yes. And everyone's like, I can't believe she's not talking about it. Meanwhile, she's doing what she's... And by the way, so was everyone. Like,
yeah.
That wasn't... And I think we even said that. I'm like, maybe she's trying to focus on like...
Yes, we
did. It's not about her being about her battered woman. It's about breaking the cycle and it ends with us. And like,
right.
And
I think that came... When we did our deep dive on it, we did all the PR stuff for one of our Patreon episodes. I think I read something maybe Colleen Hoover said, but that is what it was about. Like, they were talking about how we didn't want to, and I think that was a part of the shift, because wasn't this the script that Blake read initially that she signed on to is different?
Well, he added in some stuff after, but yeah.
I feel like there was a difference in how it focused on the abuse.
So, by the way, this was all happening in, like, July, like, before any of this. So this was him working with, I guess, just his publicity team. Like, okay, yeah. So Jennifer Abel is his publicist. So this was all happening in July, okay, before they even ever hit the red carpet. This was also happening in June. Like, he was forming this retaliatory plan before the press even started for it. Then this was all happening before then August 9th. That's when they hire Wayfarer, the production company, hires Melissa Nathan and the agency group who worked on the Johnny Depp thing and basically did this with Amber Heard. So we have a lot of their correspondence. All right. So here's what they paid for this. Ready? From Melissa Nathan to his publicist. So incredibly glad that the press went so well today. From what I know, Justin felt really supported. He's lucky to have you. We took the time today to do research and get digital quotes, blah, blah, blah. Full transparency is key here. We have seen the most innocuous issues turn giant due to socials, or the hugest crisis have no effects on social whatsoever. You just cannot tell at this stage. But Blake Lively does have some of the Taylor Swift fan base, so we will be taking it extremely seriously. Quote one.
Okay, wait, iconic.
I know. Taylor Swift is named multiple times.
Okay, sir, we need to take this seriously.
I know. Quote one, $175,000.
Oh my God.
This will be for a 3 to 4 month period and includes a website, full Reddit, full social account takedowns, full social crisis team on hand for anything, engage with audiences in the right way, start threads of theories. This is the way to be 100% protected. Quote two. $25,000 per month for 3 months if it needs to be seeded. This will be for creation of social fan engagement to go back and forth with any negative accounts, hoping to change narrative and stay on track. All of this will be most importantly untraceable. There's a lot more to both of these quotes, but easier to discuss via phone in terms of capabilities. Great. So that's, can you believe that? That's how much money they were willing to spend on this.
And that's an admission of guilt to me.
That's an admission of guilt to me, just like this. Then Jennifer Abel, the publicist, sends this to the co-founder of the Wayfarer Production Group. Thanks for the call. Confidentially, I'm out to dinner with a friend of 12 plus years who writes for People Magazine, Fox News, In Touch, Us Weekly, and she's fully briefed the situation and is armed and ready to take this story of Blake weaponizing feminism to any of her outlets the minute we give her the green light. She hates Blake, has heard the story before, and will do anything for us. Just FYI, smiley face.
Unreal.
Like, I'm sorry, it's so, like, sinister. So then they're like, he gets the document. Which,
I can't believe we didn't hear about these subpoenas. Like, I can't believe there was...
Well, now Jennifer Abel's saying there wasn't a subpoena.
Well, how did they get them?
I don't know.
A whistleblower. A mole.
I don't know. His publicist says, I was never subpoenaed and I never gave this stuff. So, but she says she left the like team that she was working for or something. And she was like, but they all have access to all my stuff. So it could have been them and she doesn't know. Or she might be trying to cover her ass. That's in her statement. We'll get there. But he basically sees their document, which outlines in so many words the things they're planning to do. They also talk about Taylor Swift in this document where they're like, we can use the same tactics people use against her where they say she's a bully because she's standing up. We can do that. All these things. He says he doesn't feel protected enough by that document that outlines this whole plan. Proactive. Nothing's happened yet. Outlines the whole plan. He doesn't feel protected enough. So the publicist texts Melissa Nathan and says, I just want to let you know, like, he's not feeling really, like, secure. He, quote, this is a quote, he wants to feel like she can be buried. And Melissa Nathan responds, we can't write it down to him. We can't write, we will destroy her. We'll go to this, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this.
Is this where the quote, where the, I like the, I didn't like the part, but the part where she says he needs to understand how lucky he
is. This isn't yet, that yet, but he has to look at it as information document for us to be armed with. That's all. Imagine if a document saying all the things that he wants ends up in the wrong hands. Insane. Then Jennifer Abel texts Melissa Nathan. I'm having reckless thoughts of wanting to plant pieces this week of how horrible Blake is to work with. Just to get ahead of it. She's putting us through hell. Melissa Nathan says, same. And already off the record, I spoke to the Daily Mail because she's my friend. She's ready when we are. I think we need to put the social combat plan into motion. So do I. Boom. I mean, they literally did this. They're sending different articles to each other saying, I can tell you've done a lot of work here. Oh my gosh, good. There's nothing in here about being unsafe. The fat comment, sexual, thank fucking God. That's from his publicist. Like, aware of everything he's doing. Then someone's like, okay, we need to stop talking about his religion and the misogynistic stuff, that we need to get that stuff under control. Are we in the clear? We survived. They're saying it's actually really funny. And this is the best part. The majority of socials are so pro-Justin and I don't even agree with half of them, LOL. Like, crazy. Are you crazy. Kidding? He doesn't realize how lucky he is right now. We need to press on him just how fucking lucky. The whispering in the ear, the sexual connotations, like Jesus fucking Christ. Other members feeling uncomfortable watching it. I mean, there's just so much. How did you send that in writing, though, you idiot? You put that in writing? This is your job. Idiot. Idiot, idiot, idiot.
Guys, I think, Caroline, like, is fully up and moving.
I'm sorry. Like, how fucking stupid are you? Like, nothing. Very little pickup. Fans remain supportive of Justin Baldoni. This is to Justin. Fans remain supportive of you and believe the issue of the feud is because she took control of the movie, period. Like, everything, and I'm not saying you guys, because I know the Road Warriors think clearly, but everything y'all were thinking was on purpose. It's they made you think all of it.
It's actually so crazy to think about the fact that it worked. Like, I know we're seeing this now and she's vindicated, but if this hadn't come out.
Well, listen to this. This is part 139. Miss Nathan's reference to Jed is a reference to Mr. Jed Wallace, an independent contractor based in Austin, Texas, who was retained by the agency group to perform social media services on behalf of Wayfarer and Mr. Baldoni in connection with their engagement. The quotation appears to be a reference to efforts by Mr. Wallace to seed and influence online forums on Reddit attacking Miss Lively and defending Mr. Baldoni. He texts Melissa Nathan, we are crushing it on Reddit. You guys will love this article, this TikTok. Basically saying that Blake needs to divorce Ryan because he's made her into a meme. He's ruining her biggest movie of the year, forcing her to ostracize Justin, rewriting the script, etc. And socials are really ramping up. It's actually sad because it just shows you have people who really want to hate on women.
It's crazy how self-aware they are.
I know.
Especially this earlier when they were sending the texts that were like, they clearly don't even like him. Like, they don't even, they think he's a creep.
They think he's a bad person, but they're like, this is our job, which makes me think, like, with Johnny Depp too, like, I mean, another thing, this is crazy. So this is from the New York Times article, which I don't have pulled up, so I might get this a little bit wrong, but this is the main thing. So obviously we have that interview of Blake where she says, oh, well, congrats on your little bump. And that was one of the things that people just
really
took
latched on to
and really had a problem with. So we were like, yeah, not a good look for her.
No.
But celebrities do have bad interviews.
Yeah.
And it was kind of just that moment of like, why now? Like, why?
Uh-huh.
Why did this reporter decide to, why is everyone?
We said that then.
Yes. We were like, why is everyone just like digging up these things. And
it seemed very opportunistic.
Yes. So when you really look, especially it's even worse.
I think this might be a lost cult quote, or maybe someone else said this, but like, I think that same reporter had another interview that then she, I don't remember who it was with, but she pushed another interview.
Amber Heard.
Was it?
Yes, Phoebe.
Because people were like, okay, maybe it's not you. Maybe it's not, okay, having this many bad interview moments, maybe it's not the people you're interviewing.
I don't know if that's the one I'm actually talking about. I don't know if it was after, but she's only released like a few things on her YouTube channel or whatever.
And they're all bad.
Well, it's like this and like Amber Heard. And the Amber Heard one is from a few years ago, whatever. And upon some further research, that reporter works for Melissa Nathan.
Yep. Oh my gosh.
So Melissa Nathan, guys, these accounts are real people, yeah, but they are working for people like Melissa Nathan.
It's like Pop Crave. Who's Pop Crave connected to?
Seriously, but they're going out there and they're hiring people to make the TikToks that you're watching.
Can someone get on that? What side of the street was Pop Crave on with this?
Can someone please figure this out? Please, please, please. But doesn't it just make your head like explode thinking that this is like, I mean, literally everything you're seeing, you have been selected to see. It is on purpose. The comments, like all these things, it's actually crazy. Okay, this is to Jennifer Abel, the publicist. Hi, team. So far, extremely limited pickup on Daily Mail or Page Six. We'll continue to keep an eye out and send pieces as needed. But so far, it's been steady coverage on pure speculation. We've started to see a shift on social due largely to Jed and his team's efforts to shift the narrative towards shining a spotlight on Blake and Ryan. Again, we'll continue to send links and screenshots. I wanted to update you guys. Okay, so here's the TED Talk. All right, so Justin Baldoni's TED Talk, just a few things that he said in the TED Talk that I think are important. And then I'm going to mention a few more things that he did on set, and then we can kind of move on. But okay, a couple things he said in his TED Talk called I'm Done Trying to Be Man Enough. Mr. Baldoni stated in his 2017 TED Talk, men are the problem. They created the glass ceiling, and if they want to be part of the solution, then words are no longer enough. By Mr. Baldoni's account, he became a feminist fighting for gender equality so quickly he hadn't even realized that's what he was or trying to do. In Mr. Baldoni's own words, his activism starts in the mirror with an audience of one. He feels a deep responsibility to tear down the walls of power and privilege and believes the world needs men to show up, not in big ways, but in hundreds and thousands of little ways to create a better, more equitable, just world. Over the past approximately 7 years, and as relevant to this complaint, Mr. Baldoni has made the following statements. A, let's just shut up and finally listen to the women in our lives. B, men are going to have to start doing now is recognizing when they made women uncomfortable and didn't realize it.
Oh my God.
I think that's when the other side of the Me Too moment is, I'm sorry. C, growing up, how many times did I hear bros before hoes? How demeaning, how sexist. We've built this system, the opposite of accountability. And now it's time to figure out how, as men, we can break that system. And it starts with showing what a real man is. A real man is someone that says, hey man, we're still friends, but that's not cool. Imagine being sexually assaulted, finally coming forward about this traumatic thing that has happened to you and having people acting like you were to blame. Are you confident enough to listen to the women in your life? And will you be man enough to stand up to other men when you hear locker room talk, when you hear stories of sexual harassment? All of us have a situation or a pattern that we need to end the cycle of. First of all, I want men to stop asking the question, why do women stay? I want men to take accountability. I want men to hold other men accountable. I mean, it just goes.
When was the TED Talk?
2017, but all these comments are like in the last 7 years. So they did a little bit of a social media, or they did an internet like test to see of everything that's ever been said about Blake Lively online, how much of it is also mentioning Justin Baldoni. Now think about Blake Lively's career and how much there probably is. Then why is 35% of everything she's ever been talked about is associated with him? His name is attached to it. And if you look at this graph, the red, the green is all the good press she's gotten this year. The red is all the bad one. And that big line there is when he
hired the team. Which is like, okay, I'm sorry. You guys want to act like Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively are this powerhouse in Hollywood. If they were, why wouldn't they have had this? Like, and I think they are, but it's like, if they were what you guys think they are, I don't think they would have had the year that they had.
No. And so the like wrap up of what they're saying basically here, there's a lot, but it says On information and belief, the Wayfarer team seeded social media content into publications with small audiences and lax editorial standards, and then fed those posts and or articles to publications like Page Six, Newsweek, NY Post, TMZ, and BuzzFeed.
The worst places imaginable.
These publications have larger audiences and greater reach, which significantly amplified the negative sentiment toward Miss Lively. Content from low-influence sites was often linked or referenced in articles on these high-influence platforms. The social manipulation campaign engineered by Mr. Baldoni and Wayfarer helped create and sustain a negative news cycle and social media algorithm around Miss Lively. These are the negative comments, the way that they trended.
Oh my God.
Her company, she like completely like fucked over her hair care company. She like lost so much money.
Well, Blake.
I know. But
we have different reasoning sometimes for why things fail, Miss. I have straw in my hair. Which is Blake's whole vibe is, yeah, I have straw in my hair.
Okay, I'm going to read a couple of the projections that they put in place for the return to production when they had that meeting. Number one, an intimacy coordinator must be present at all times when Blake Lively's on set. Bare fucking minimum.
Normal these days.
There must be a closed set during the rehearsal or filming of any scene involving simulated sex or nudity. Duh. There is to be no spontaneous improvising of any scenes involving physical touching, simulated sex, or nudity. Everything has to be choreographed by an intimacy coordinator, and the intimacy coordinator must be there. Physical touching and or comments on Blake Lively's physical appearance must only be done or made in connection with the character and scene work, not to Blake Lively personally. There are to be no discussions of personal experiences with sex or nudity. No one should ever enter Blake Lively's trailer when she's in a state of undress for any reason. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Let me now just read a couple other things I pulled because these are really crazy, and then we can move on. I'm sorry. I know this is a lot. Couple other things that Justin said on set that were named in this thing. He was in a taxi ride with Blake and Mr. Heath, who is also a co-founder of the Wayfarer production company. He says, "Did I always ask for consent? No. Did I always listen when they said no? No." And he claimed this was an example of how we all have things from which we can learn and grow. And when Miss Lively exited the car, her driver immediately remarked that he did not want Lively to be alone with Baldoni going forward. Number 42, he claimed he could speak to the dead and on several occasions told her that he had spoken to her dead father. It was off-putting and violative for Baldoni to claim a personal relationship with her recently deceased father.
Oh my God. He's crazy.
And number 44, Blake said, so Blake was wearing like a lacy bra underneath something. And he was like, "I want to see your onesie." And she was like taking off her coat or something. And he said, "You look sexy." And she was like, "It's not really what I'm going for." It was like a nursing low cut thing. And then he was like, "Sorry, you look hot." And she said, "Not that either." And he goes, "Sorry, I missed the HR meeting." And walked away. Let's see. As a result of Mr. Baldoni's behavior on May 29th, 2023, another cast member lodged a sexual harassment complaint about Baldoni's gross and unwanted comments towards her and others.
Wait, who?
Doesn't say.
But someone on the set.
Yep.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Number 49, he called her trainer, her personal trainer, secretly without her knowledge to say he wants her to lose weight in 2 weeks. She got strep and he gifted her like a specialist. It was a weight loss specialist. When she was like looking at the paperwork, it was for weight loss. It was not for strep. There was no COVID protocol. They told nobody when there was an exposure. So Blake and her infant child both got COVID.
Oh my God.
And they weren't told about the exposure, which they had known about. Let's see what else. They didn't give her any breaks for breastfeeding. She was actively breastfeeding in this moment. So sometimes she would go 6 hours
without
a break.
Which is another thing where it's like, fuck you for the weight loss. I mean,
yes.
Already fuck you, but like, she just gave him birth,
yes.
Which is like, I think so many women deal with that vulnerable time of,
yeah,
like, this is, women feel so uncomfortable about their body at that stage.
Well, and also
stage.
To tell her, hey, this is how you give birth. You know, like,
know.
No, actually, you would give birth completely naked.
See, she's
would
like,
I
just said it.
Like, oh my God.
I just said it was fine.
Yeah, so get this. There were no breaks for the breastfeeding. And so she'd go sometimes 6 hours without a break. And she developed painful mastitis because of it. Her fucking nipples got clogged.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. What else? Okay, yeah, so there were no employment protections for the Wayfarer production company, no employee handbook, no sexual harassment policy, no information, no training on sexual harassment, no information on discrimination or respectful workplace expectations. There was no formal HR thing. On May 26, 2023, Blake tried to file an HR complaint with Sony, the distributor, and they said they couldn't because they're only the distributor and not the studio responsible for production. So she tried. Earlier in the production, another actress made a complaint about his comments on her appearance. He said in writing that he would adjust accordingly. So it's in writing. But on June 8th, 2023, she told Blake, and I really think this was Jenny Slate. She told Blake, quote, outside of anything in a scene, I actually cannot talk to Justin at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Baldoni later expressed suspicion regarding her friendship with this actress as if they were colluding against him.
Wow.
And one of my favorites, and I'm just going to read this because it's actually too crazy for me to like paraphrase. One of these instances where he went into her dressing room and started sobbing and crying and held up the shoot. You won't believe this, Phoebe. It is crazy. While on one hand, Mr. Baldoni was objectifying Miss Lively as a sex object, on the other hand, he went out of his way to message criticisms of her age and weight, neither of which she could change during filming. On the second day of filming, for example, Mr. Baldoni made the rest of the cast and crew wait for hours while he cried in Miss Lively's dressing room, claiming social media commentators were saying that Miss Lively looked old and unattractive based off paparazzi photos from the set. She tried to reassure him that she should look authentic in the scenes depicted in the photos, which were just after her character had been abused by her fictional husband rather than hot. Mr. Baldoni, however, appeared focused on her sexual appeal above all else. His lengthy outburst caused a delay in shooting, forcing an emotional scene to be shot haphazardly. And this was also mentioned in the like her demands. One was no more crying in Miss Lively's dressing room.
Oh,
like that
my
is
God.
One of the demands written.
He is actually sick.
Can you believe that? So I'll just tell you what Jennifer Abel's statement was. The publicist broke her silence. So I'll read that and then we can be done with this. But it's so crazy. Okay, so she put this into a Facebook group for like publicists that has a PR and marketing Facebook group with 21,000 members. It looks like a comment, so I'm guessing there's a thread talking about her, and she's in there, and she saw it, and she commented.
Oh, my God.
Hi. She was also young. Hi. I never thought the day would come when I needed to defend myself with my own peers, but this certainly has been an interesting and devastating, quite frankly, couple of days, so here we are. But here are the facts. No, I was never subpoenaed. I found out my private text messages and emails were included in the complaint after I received it on Friday night, and the New York Times contacted me 1.5 hours after receipt. They had already reviewed the 80-page document and had questions prepared, and apparently also received thousands of pages of documents with our correspondence that we never saw. So it's clear this was a coordinated effort, but nothing we haven't seen before since I've been working in talent PR for over 15 years now. I had recently left my previous firm, at which I was still with during this campaign, with a team who all participated in the campaign and a boss who oversaw, and who had access to my work emails and work phone. So you can deduce from that what you will. What the cherry-picked messages don't include, although not shockingly as it doesn't fit the narrative, is that there was no smear implemented. No negative press was ever facilitated. No social combat plan, although we were prepared for it, as it's our job to be ready for any scenario. But we didn't have to implement anything because the internet was doing the work for us. Sure, we talked about it, contemplated if we needed certain things, flagged accounts that we needed to monitor, worked with the social team to help us stay on top of the narrative so we could act quickly if needed. And yes, we rejoiced and joked in the fact that fans were recognizing our clients' heart and work without us having to do anything but keep our heads down and focus on positive interviews for our client. As the text show, we sophomorically reveled and again joked privately to each other about the internet's feedback to the woman whose team was making our lives incredibly difficult over the course of the campaign. I'm human. The long hours, months of preparation on top of my day-to-day scope, it felt good to see that although we were prepared, we didn't have to do anything over the top to protect our client. Incredibly difficult, you say? In what way? Funny you should ask. I was notified at the start of the campaign that the opposing team had been planting horrible stories about my client as a failsafe if my client did not comply with the demands set forth for the campaign.
It's funny because I didn't really hear anything about him.
No, none of this. None of this came out. Blake Lively could have spent $150,000 to tear you down, but she didn't. Like, you did, dude.
Right, exactly.
We brought on crisis as it's not something that I do. My sole job was to put together interviews, screening opportunities, and speaking opportunities for my client in support of the film, a standard scope of work. I did my job. What kind of woman would work against another woman who is a victim of all the things being claimed? Thanks for asking. After reviewing the evidence, facts, hard proof that countered every single thing that was being claimed and demanded at the start of production, I made a choice to stand by my client of almost 5 years, who had dedicated his life to the equal treatment of others, especially women, who had no incidents of negative treatment of others, and who had a wonderful community and team at Wayfarer who all held the same moral fortitude and lived their life accordingly. As representatives, we all have to make that choice, so I did that to the best of my ability and felt good about our efforts. Is my client perfect? No. In fact, he says that he's not perfect so constantly to the point that I tell him he needs to be less self-deprecating because it could be taken the wrong way. Are Blake's feelings valid? It's not my position to say or speculate what she was feeling in these moments that she claims, and I would never slam a woman for speaking her truth. But at the end of the day, if it's not the truth and there's evidence that proves otherwise, then as a representative, I have to do what I feel is right as well. And that is that. Girl, you said a whole lot of nothing. Yeah. Like, no, I don't.
Wow.
So that is the super deep dive.
Well,
do you feel like you have any questions left?
No, but I do know that we were right.
We were right. And also, I'm like, I mean, a lot could still happen, of course. But I think now at this point, my main concern is that it's just too late. Like, that all this damage is already done for Blake. It's going to be so hard now to swing the pendulum the other way. And no one's going to fucking do what I just did and read the 80-page document.
People are already seen it as a knock on her, yes, too. So,
and it's just like, oh my god, they're like, why is she doing this now? Oh my god.
Well,
and
it takes,
like,
a long time to file a lawsuit. Yes, and
I mean, it's 80 pages long
stuff.
But like, for in my opinion, like, we have texts, we have screenshots, we have, and maybe all of the campaign plans. Like,
y'all were so concerned about her not making the movie about domestic violence. Maybe she wanted to let the movie breathe,
yes,
for a bit,
yeah,
and not take away from the movie any more than this stuff already did.
Maybe
so
they started
waited.
Talking about a sequel. It went to number one on Netflix immediately when it came out this month in December. Like,
I still need to watch it.
You know, maybe that's what they're doing. It's starting, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't know. I think it's really, really interesting. I hope that she will come out on top of this, honestly, because...
Go on Last Call, Blake.
Go on Last Call, Blake. They will take care of you. I would definitely suggest, if this is something you're interested in, read the New York Times article and read the 80-page thing, because there's... I mean... I just really pulled out what I thought was really interesting, but like, every single bullet point is fascinating, yeah, and you could find things that...
It's crazy.
You know, but yeah, isn't that amazing?
Wow.
What an amazing inside look into what happens in the Hollywood machine.
Truly, it's crazy, because I think we think we're smarter than we are as,
yes,
as people, and we
think
don't...
we can see through the bullshit when the reality is...
And we
is,
also,
like,
I think a lot of the time, don't think it's actually happening.
Yes. And also, if you really read this again and get in there and get into the documents, like, they show comment examples that were made. They talk about specific social media things. So if you don't think it's happening, like, they list out specific accounts, specific, like...
Wow.
Comments and threads and things like that. I mean, the fact that Justin Baldoni, what kind of feminist? That's my thing, is like, I'm sorry, he's made his whole career on being a feminist and being this type of person. And in my opinion, he should not have wanted to direct this movie. He should have wanted Blake,
yes,
to do it.
Yes.
The other thing is, you know what then? If you're this type of person, what happened to the man in the mirror shit? Like, take accountability. If somebody comes to you with these types of complaints and your job...
If this is the after... Mm-hmm. If this is the after, what were you like before?
Yes. You need to be saying, oh my God, you know, I didn't know, just like you were saying, men need to be accountable even when they don't realize they're making women uncomfortable. He needs to say, oh, that wasn't my intention. Instead of saying, oh, I'm not even attracted to you, as why, you know, he couldn't have possibly improvised a kiss.
The HR comment is crazy.
It's crazy. It's like, dude, it's your responsibility to have the HR department to do these things. You want to run want to executive produce films. You want to run a production company. Like, then
you
this is your
HR.
Job. This is your job, and Blake Lively probably knows more about it than you do, idiot, because she's been doing it her whole fucking life, so she knows when things aren't up to snuff. But she thought this movie was so important, and she signed a contract, so she fucking stuck with it. That's what happened here. Like, that's the story. And I know it's really a shame when we lose a male ally and we realize they're not who we thought they were, but it's worse to tear down another woman because you don't want to believe it, okay?
Exactly.
And it's really a shame, but he needs to take accountability, and there should have been some, oh my God, it was not my intention to make you feel that way, but obviously I did. So maybe you are working with a, quote, difficult woman, but does the punishment fit the crime?
Right, exactly.
Her asking for these accommodations, and just because he was afraid of her bringing this up.
Right.
And we have to mention, all of this was done because he was scared she might start talking about the stuff he did. If you thought you had nothing to be ashamed of,
it's an admission of guilt to me. And he was dropped, yeah, from his agency, so.
Oh my God, the fact that the William Morris Talents agency dropped him is insane. Just for those of you that don't know,
yeah,
that happened, which is major. So I just felt like we needed to spend most of the time today really diving into this, because it was one of our top 10 pop culture moments.
Yeah,
how funny that we literally just were talking about it, and like, what a Christmas gift.
Yeah, truly.
All you have to do is print out the 80 pages and wrap it and give it to me, and I will be thrilled.
Done.
To read it again with a highlighter. Put a highlighter in there. All right. Well, with that, should we get into our rotations?
Yeah, you're first.
Okay. Oh, gosh. I don't really remember what I wrote. One sec. I'm all fired up now. All right. First up, you guys, someone we all know and love, jolly old Saint Nick. Guys, it is Christmas week. It is Phoebe's pissed because she's like, I was hoping you let me do Dream This Week and Jolly Old St. Nick was on mine.
Do you think we're going to have a white Christmas?
I don't know. I hope. There's been a lot of snow. So, well, not a lot, but it has snowed frequently, so I would love that. But it is Christmas week. I hope you are all going to have an amazing, amazing Christmas. And the best gift of all for you guys is that you're still getting episodes from us. Because a lot of podcasts are turning off their mics for the holiday season, not us. We love you guys, so we're here. So that's first.
We didn't even know that this is an in-person episode. Did y'all notice?
Oh, yeah, guys, this is an in-person episode.
You probably noticed I got up like 800 times.
Yeah, to blow our nose.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. Okay, next is being vindicated. I love it. Yeah, and that's how I feel right now. I mean, so much fun today with my coffee, just prepping for this episode.
Caroline has this happen a lot, and she's talked about this. Because she has a good...
Thank you.
A good sense of people.
Yeah, I really feel like I do. And I want to say, I think a lot of people probably owe Amber Heard an apology now, too. Because how many times has this happened to other celebrities?
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? How many people have been canceled because of shit like this?
I want someone to go back and look and try to excavate that and see.
I mean, honestly, I feel like just this coming out now is like anyone that this.
I hope there's like a Vanity Fair. It's like an article about like.
But she's like apparently living her best life like in Mexico right now.
Amber Heard?
Yeah, she like moved there. She's like done.
Good girl. Go.
She is done with the spotlight. I don't blame her. But I mean, I just think I thought it was weird when he hired Johnny Depp's PR team because who says you champion women the way you do.
We noted that.
Why would you ever support people who did this to a woman? Oh, wait, what I was going to say also is, I'm sorry, the Hailey Bieber thing.
Yeah.
He sends a text. He's like, this is what we would need. We need something like this. And sends a thread of a post from like a random Twitter account that's like a thread of all the times Hailey Bieber was a bully and not a feminist. He literally said that. I was like, this is what we need for Blake to cancel her. What kind of fucking feminist would do that? Yeah, or wants to see that happen to someone?
With the Amber Heard of it all, I think that something to keep in mind is that this vindication does not mean that like they're necessarily great people.
No, oh my God, no.
But
I think Amber Heard and Johnny Depp are both crazy. Yeah, I think they both absolutely. Are in the wrong, but I think what happened to her versus what happened to him,
right, especially the public eye.
Yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, it's exactly what I'm saying. Like, he's working.
He has this fucking Dior commercial. I
and
hate
it's just so frustrating because I just feel like the way that we are so willing to overlook what men do. I mean, it's just, again, Chris Brown being nominated for a Grammy. It's like Jay-Z cheating on Beyonce. It's like these people are actually wronging some of the most powerful, beloved women in the world. And if we can't even ride for them,
right,
if we're not even willing to cancel these men for the women that we that are the most celebrated
like
women in the world.
Justin Baldoni?
Yeah.
Who fucking cares?
Like, I just don't get why they're so excited to trample on a woman. And even the fucking publicist or the Melissa Nathan saying it's just sad because it shows how quickly people are willing to fucking take down a woman. Like, I mean, and that is what this shows. No one even was like, they were like, well, I'm kind of curious what he did, but not enough to find out. Like, I'm just going to go on. Like, it's just crazy. So being vindicated. And then Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
Just because I love her. If she is one of the women who is, you know, anonymously quoted in this case, then I think that, like, I don't know. I feel bad that she had to, that any women on this set had to feel that way and so powerless, like they couldn't say anything. And I think what we need to do here is fucking commend Blake Lively for taking one for the team. She might have ruined her life for this.
I need a pap walk of Taylor, Blake and Jenny Slate.
Oh my God.
Walking to dinner in New York. That's what I need.
Oh my God. That's what I want for Christmas. Yes. Jolly old St. Nick.
Well, Taylor's going to be here on Christmas.
Oh, right.
Which, okay, last night everybody's like, I don't think she's coming. People
girl,
are like,
well, in her heart, there's a Christmas tree farm, okay?
She's literally a PA girl.
She's a PA girl. She's just like Kaylor. She's just like Love Island's Kaylor, who also
me
lives on a Christmas tree farm.
You were talking about Carly Kloss and Taylor Swift's relationship.
Oh my God, iconic. Wait, do you want to know something funny? I had to make a new like password for something, and I made it a joke on somehow Diana Agron and Taylor Swift. And
did you see that tweet the other day where someone was like, girl, you could have just said no?
I think I did see it. That's not what inspired it. I'll tell you when we are done with this.
When we hang up.
What my password was. But But yeah, she could have just said no. Okay, anyway, your turn for your nightmare.
Okay, first is Jessica Baldoni.
Bye.
Second is that other girl.
Melissa Nathan.
Yeah, the one who commented. And then last is Landon. Landon. From Southern Charm.
Oh. Phoebe's in the back catalog.
I'm watching very old Southern Charm. And look, I know Catherine sucks. I know she sucks.
Yeah.
And I was explaining this to mom, and she thinks this is gonna go away, but I think I've known Catherine long enough.
Right, of course.
I do just have a little soft spot for her.
I do think it might go away.
Like just a little bit of like how young she is. Sometimes in her confessionals, I'm just like,
I do feel that she didn't have a shot. She was completely
ruined her life. 100%. And I'm sure she wouldn't say that because the kids came out of it. Like I'm sure she
probably would say that because she's not super like nice. She doesn't.
But Landon is such a mean girl.
Yeah.
And I hate her laugh. I hate the way she talks to Catherine. I hate the way she talks to, like, I kind of fall where Craig falls with Catherine right now. Yeah. Like, he knows, like, he's not stupid, but he's rooting for her.
Seriously, why are we going to kick this girl when she's down?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. No one's had, like, a rougher go of it. And you know, like and I'm not saying she didn't bring a lot of it on herself. Right. But, like, really, aren't the low-hanging fruit, like, you know, doesn't she have enough that she has to deal with without you guys being so fucking mean to her?
Landon's got that like Whitney part of her that like salivates at the idea that Catherine's going to be taken down. Yeah. The reunions, and I can't stand her. Yeah. I cannot stand her. And she's a mean girl.
You're a mean girl, Landon. You're a bitch.
And she makes Cameron mean.
Yeah, which is crazy because I love Cameron. Yeah.
What does her bio mean? Her bio says brand deals don't come with a rearview mirror. Did something happen? Did she get kicked off the show? That's canceled?
Good question. I can't. Well, she's not on the show. Well, obviously she's not on the show. I don't know. I can't remember.
And I'm curious to see. I didn't finish this week's Southern Charm episode, but Amber said that Madison. I love the idea that Amber's watching Madison's Amazon Live. That's so funny to me.
Amber loves an Amazon Live, and we love that for Amber. I love Madison and Paige.
Apparently Madison said she and Craig owe JT an apology.
She did, which they do mostly Craig. Because Craig says to Miss Patricia, JT called you a bitch.
And he didn't.
And so that.
And that's giving why kick him while he's down.
Yes, exactly.
The man's walking with a cane.
And about the cane. Hey, JT, stop walking with a cane.
Yeah. And I'm shocked by the whole Vanita, like with the direction that's going
to me too. I'm like, hey, Vanita.
What happened with Manny?
What happened with your ex from last season?
You can name drop him.
What happened with Manny from last season? Someone I know.
Someone you know.
Just saying. Anyway, I think that's the episode.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
My voice is done.
Thank God. Thank God I'm done listening to your voice. Wow. So is everyone else. But guys, I hope you enjoyed the deep dive on Justin Baldoni. So timely. It was like Christmas Eve last night, being excited to talk about it today.
To talk about. We would have been talking about Bravo for 2 hours.
I mean, yeah. I was like, I'm honestly not even posting to ask people what they want us to talk about because
we're booked.
I'm doing a deep dive on this. And yeah, so anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed. Love you so much. Thank you for listening. Merry freaking Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. What an amazing thing. Nature is healing. Hanukkah and Christmas happening on the same day. Kidding?
Gorge.
Love that.
Well, Hanukkah is famously 8 days.
Well, I know it's famously 8 days, but it's starting on Christmas.
That's gorgeous.
And I always felt so bad because,
and frankly, it should be that way because that
you don't have Christmas. You don't have Hanukkah break. I feel bad.
And also, it fills in that space.
Yeah.
Between Christmas and New Year's.
Well, and it makes me feel like, okay, I only get one day, but I kind of like knowing that you guys are still going because it feels more festive for me. Like, right. I'm not in the post-Christmas time until Hanukkah's over.
Yes.
But if Hanukkah happens December 1st, then it's like, okay, what's the point of having Christmas?
Okay, no fun.
No fun. So that's how I feel about that. We love you guys. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye. Let us know what you think.
And splat.
Hey, you should probably be on the right side of history.
And I'm walking here.
I'm splat.
And I'm getting up off the couch.
And I'm just stalling for Phoebe to get out of my couch because it's so comfortable. You never can.